It's Live and Local. I'm Kevin Kelly. On the program today, we have two of the numerous performers involved in the anticipated first annual DOCHA Chamber Music Festival. That stands for Downtown Champaign, which is where it takes place this week, starting April 1st through the 3rd. And those two performers, violinist Stefan Milenkovich and cellist Dmitry Kuzov, both of the University of Illinois School of Music faculty. And they'll talk a bit about the festival and play one of the pieces that they will be playing together. They'll also be involved with other performers in the festival. In the later portion of the show, I'll talk with David Veo and Nancy Brokaw, who are respectively composer and librettist for Fertile Ground, an original opera commissioned by Prairie Fire Theater and presented cooperatively with Illinois Wesleyan University Opera Program. It had its premiere Sunday night in Bloomington, and performances remain three times this week, Tuesday, Thursday, and Friday. We'll hear about that in the later portion of the show. It's Live and Local on FM 90.9. That was a performance by the then 11-year-old Stefan Milenkovich, violinist with the Ljubljana Symphony Orchestra, Anton Nanut, the conductor. The final movement of Dmitri Kabalevsky's violin concerto, and heard on Live and Local here on FM 90.9, by way of a little surprise for one of our participants in this portion of the show. Stefan Milenkovich himself is now on the University of Illinois faculty. And it was funny, I had Mike Richard, our sound engineer, turn that up to be sure they could hear it in the studio here. And Stefan sitting here, I know that piece. I played that once when I was 10 or so. And turns out, how about that? It's himself, and he was still remembering the piece and playing along with it here in the studio, however many years later. Stefan is here with Dmitry Kuzov, who is a professor of cello at the University of Illinois, and they're here to talk about and play a sample from the upcoming DOCHA Chamber Music Festival. DOCHA as in Downtown Champaign. Apparently it is also sanctioned to say it DOCHA, if you like. And it starts on Thursday with three evenings, Thursday, Friday, Saturday. Thursdays is at Radio Maria, restaurant downtown Champaign. That starts at 7 o'clock. And then Friday is at 6:30 at Cakes on Walnut, and Saturday at 4:30 at Jim Gould's restaurant. And there's lots of different performers involved, including the Pacifica Quartet, whose violist, Masumi Rostad, who is going to be with us on tomorrow's show to talk a bit about the festival as well. And Jonathan Keeble is a flutist and young harpist, and lots of other folks from the University of Illinois School of Music primarily. Anyway, gentlemen, thank you very much for coming in.
Thank you.
Pleasure. Thank
you.
And where did this festival idea originate? I know Masumi was one of the folks, but who was this something that you guys concocted in collaboration with him, or what?
Yeah, well, it's been cooking for a while, and I think it just came about like over drinks, pretty much. We gather very often and just have a good time, eat, have a glass of wine. And at one point we just said, you know what, let's do a festival here. And of course, first thought was, yeah, well, there are many festivals already, you know, so how can this be different and, you know, why here? And so in the end, we thought there isn't really anything like it in downtown Champaign. And the idea is really to involve the downtown itself and to make it very, very accessible and very easygoing and very relaxed, so that people can come, have a good time. That's why the venues are not really traditional concert venues at all. Radio Maria, Cakes on Walnut, Jim Gould's. I mean, these are, you know, places where people usually go to eat, drink, have a sweet, have a good time. And so to that we will add us having a good time and playing at this festival. So we figured, you know, when you put it all together, it'll really generate something unique, not only for Champagne, but I think wider too. It's a relatively unusual festival idea.
And of those venues you mentioned, the only one I'm aware of that has fairly frequently had some music is Jim Gould's. They'll have jazz players and other folks come in every once in a while and play, but I'm not aware of the other two.
Radio Maria has a salsa night.
Do they?
Radio Maria has, they had open mic night, but nothing is really, you know, it's not considered a venue where you would go and play anything even remotely classical. Cakes on Walnut is cupcakes. Cupcake place. And
fancy cupcakes.
Fancy cupcakes, yeah. So anyway, if you're trying to decide which concert to go through to, I think the first three concerts are the best, and then the rest is
and then the rest is next year.
Yeah, the rest is next year.
Yeah, there are exactly three concerts. Dimitri, were you involved in the early discussions for this?
Not really. I think the idea was started to cook way before I was appointed here in UOI, but lately, in the last few months, when Masumi and Stefan wanted the thing to be happening, I became involved also.
And you're involved in a number of different performers and different combinations with people, right?
Yeah.
Can you give us a hint? We're going to hear one of those pieces coming up, but some of the other ones?
Yes, so one of the pieces which is in the program we'll play for you tonight, today, and this is Passacaglia by Jochen Halvorsen, based on Georg Friedrich Händel. And another piece which I'm involved is Beethoven Eyeglasses Duo, which we're going to play with Masumi, so it's a viola cello piece. Very, very fun work.
Yeah, what is the thing with the eyeglasses?
Oh, nobody knows.
Are we just going to leave that as a big secret?
For sure we have to wear eyeglasses while playing it. I have no problem because I wear them all the time anyway, but we have to figure out what to do with Masumi.
But you're not going to be playing the eyeglasses.
Playing the eyeglasses? No.
Playing with them.
With them.
But yeah. Not playing them.
No, exactly.
Nobody will be playing anybody's eyeglasses in this concert.
Well, it says with eyeglasses obligato.
Right. Well, that's basically
we just have to
obligatory
have them. Obligatory eyeglasses.
Oh, I see. Okay. All right. What else? What else are you doing?
So the other two pieces is Beethoven Serenade for string trio, which we're playing. Stefan, Masumi, and me is a string trio. And the other piece is by one of the faculty members here, Rudolf Haken, who is a viola teacher.
One of his own compositions?
Yes, we're playing a couple of his pieces, and Diamond Walden, one of them.
And what do you think of those?
We haven't rehearsed in here. I mean, looking at my part, I really like it. It's this piece, it's fun.
Well, Rudolf is just, you know, a spectacularly creative person.
Yes.
And a brilliant guy. And, you know, he has such a personality that's really, you can't miss him anywhere. And he's a great person. And his music reflects all this. And it's just so varied and so creative. And it has includes a lot of different styles and a lot of different even instruments that, you know, he himself is such a person that like includes a lot of different styles himself, to play those pieces is really fun, really fun, and so we are looking forward, really, because he's local. I think he's
born and raised
Born and raised here, and one of the, you know, great violists and really great composers of our time. So I'm really looking forward.
And he just had a piece premiered by the Champaign-Urbana Symphony.
Yeah, and that was amazing. If anybody has a chance to go online, I think it's on YouTube.
It is on YouTube. I actually heard it that way.
And I mean, this instrument that's featured in this work is very unusual.
The continuum.
Yeah.
Haken continuum.
Keyboard, the Haken continuum. Yeah.
It's unlike anything in the world.
Yeah, so it's
amazingly inventive.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and a talented player, obviously. Stefan, what are the other things you're involved in, including a jazz trio I see here?
Yeah, well, actually, in the jazz trio, we'll have Zvonimir Tot, who is a professor at the jazz department in Chicago, the University of Illinois. And then we'll also have Larry Gray, who is actually here. Is a great double bassist. Zvonimir is a guitarist. So we're going to be doing some jazz pieces. Some are half jazz, half classical. For example, a Saraband Blue, which is inspired by, you know, a form of Saraband, the Baroque form, but it's really a jazz piece. And some will be just purely jazz with improvising and everything, because I've done that a little bit. I have always a great time doing it, and so we figured to put it into the program. So I'll do a few Bartok duets with C.B. Benhardsson, who is the violinist in the Pacifica Quartet, and that's going to be a lot of fun. You know, we are great friends, and I mean, all this whole festival is based on really amazing synergy, I think, between people themselves, and choosing pieces that are fun to play for us and that we are really hoping will be fun to listen to, enjoy, really. So it's all about positive energy, and it's all about, you know, relaxed and casual atmosphere. So so I'll do that, and then we're doing the, as Dima said, the Beethoven trio, Handel, Halvorsen, Passacaglia, and then with Rudolf, I'll do also a movement of his work, which is kind of a fast ragtime thing.
I see something out about some possible tango.
Yes, let's leave it to that. It is a possible
there
tango.
There is a question mark with an X on the schedule that I have.
I have a big question mark there too, but we'll see. There is going to be a lot of surprises here, because we try to keep it, I don't want to say it's being kept under wraps, but it's, we want to keep it open to possibilities until the very last moment. If things happen, things happen. If somebody wants to dance something, somebody might dance something. If somebody wants to play an extra piece, somebody might do that. So I'll do also Zigeunerweisen. That's the work, one of the works I've done on my recital a month ago, and that's a very popular Pablo de Sarasate work. And this will be actually played with the grad quartet from our department.
Graduate String Quartet.
Yeah, which is a great, you know, they're a great bunch of people, and it's going to be an unusual version for violin and string quartet. Usually it's violin and orchestra or violin and piano.
In fact, we're hoping to have them here tomorrow. I haven't heard confirmation of that, but...
Oh, well, let's hope
they come. Suggested they might be here. So.
Yeah, actually, I met the violist from this group, and he said that they're planning to come. So.
Oh, they are. Well, somebody should tell me that, but that at least that's a little encouraging.
Yeah.
You know, this is there's probably... Well, there is a long tradition of... centuries-old tradition of putting programs together at relatively, not necessarily the last minute, but pulling pieces in maybe that you haven't rehearsed until very shortly before, in some cases where the pieces aren't even finished being written until shortly before. I'm thinking back into Mozart's day when he was, you know, plenty of stories of him handing off the parts to the players, you know, virtually as they're rehearsing them. And that sort of thing still goes on as well, so... It sounds like a lot of fun, and maybe the best part of all for people who really just don't know what they're getting into, may not know what they're getting into, and just want to sort of wander through, is the whole thing's free.
Mm-hmm.
Yes?
Oh, yeah. The whole thing is free. Of course, you know, you actually can, which is very rare. You can eat and drink while we're playing, because the venues are active while we're playing. Nothing stops. And so that is not free.
Will you have a tip jar out there so people can throw in
that,
money?
Yes, we will have
violin cases open to.
We got to eat too, you know.
Yeah, so. Violin and cello.
We're very
cases
ambitious. We will have a cello case open. You know?
Well, yeah, then you can fill that up.
Available.
And then they can eat. They can eat later. Yeah. You can eat afterwards. We're talking with Stefan Milenkovic and Dmitry Kuzov of the Docha Chamber Music Festival, which has its inaugural performances this weekend. Well, actually, starting Thursday, 7 o'clock, Radio Maria, downtown Champaign. That's what Docha is short for. Friday night is at 6:30 at Cakes on Walnut, and Saturday starts at 4:30 at Jim Gould Restaurant. And Stefan and Dmitri, are you ready to play us something? This is a duo you're going to be doing on, should we leave it a mystery as to which of those nights? Or actually tell
Mahuno,
people.
I don't think we know either.
You may not know. I don't even see it on here, so we'll just trust that you're going to be doing it at some point. This is music by Halvorsen after Handel.
Handel, yeah? Exactly.
And Halvorsen, a Norwegian composer?
He's
Swedish.
He's actually American, I think.
Johan Halvorsen?
Yeah, I mean, what I heard that he used to live in California, but, you know.
Well,
it might be not true.
Let's see if we can handle the Halvorsen.
Yeah, handle the Halvorsen.
Oh, ha, ha, ha.
Wait, I didn't. That's
I disavow all jokes on this program unless I tell them.
Okay, sorry, it wasn't.
Which case they need submitted. To be probably disavowed even more. Stefan Milenkovic, Dmitri Kuzov here on Live and Local on FM 90.9. Laughing at the end of that because of what you all can't see, which was Dmitri Kuzov, the cellist, and Stefan Milenkovic, the violinist. As you know, if you watch string chamber players much, or string soloists at all, or certainly string quartet, it is convention that when you finish a piece or a movement, you flourish the bows in the air, and Dmitri remembered to do that, and Stefan didn't. And then he brought it up there. Anyway, you can't see this, but nonetheless, they were performing.
I don't have time for antiques.
You don't have this, for antique conventions, right?
Right.
That was music by Johann Halvorsen, after music by George Frederick Handel, a passacaglia. What does that word mean? I always forget, actually,
a
passacaglia traditionally is.
It's an old form, which basically means variations on the same bass.
So it's essentially a theme and variations, yeah. Mm-hmm. And that's one of the pieces that you can hear performed as part of the Docha Chamber Music Festival in downtown Champaign. It starts Thursday night at 7 o'clock at Radio Maria Restaurant with the Pacifica Quartet. Stefan's jazz trio will be playing, Stefan and the Sibby Bernhardsen, and more on that program. Friday at 6:30, it's in Cakes on Walnut, music by Beethoven with Dmitri and Masumi Rostad, and flute and harp duo with Jonathan Keeble and Anne Young. Also music by Debussy with Anne, Jonathan, and Masumi, and much more on that program. Aha, it's Friday that the Halvorsen is scheduled. I see that right here. Handel Halvorsen. And then Saturday at 4:30 is at Jim Gould's Restaurant, music by Beethoven, and the Sarasate and more, with the Graduate String Quartet joining them as well. And on tomorrow's program, we'll have Masumi and hopefully the Grad Quartet.
And I would just add Zvonimir Tot guitar and Larry Gray double bass. They're going to be in the trio. Coming from Chicago, just out of the goodness of their heart, as usually jazz musicians usually play for, and from goodness of their heart. And they're coming, so they will be joining us as well. I just want to make sure I mention
and
their
name. All the concerts are free to the public, unless, of course, you want to eat, in which case you have to pay the restaurant, whatever the going rate is for whatever it is you choose to have. Thank you both very much for coming in.
And you're welcome. Thank you.
Thank you.
And I hope this inaugural festival turns out to be just that, inaugural, and we'll have another one next year and beyond and so on.
It will be annually.
Annual event, that's right. The first annual. It's Live and Local on FM 90.9 coming up shortly. We'll talk with David Veo, who is a composer at Illinois Wesleyan University, and Nancy Brokaw, who is the librettist for a brand new opera called Fertile Ground that had its premiere Sunday night in Bloomington. And we'll have three performances left this week. We'll hear about that on the remaining portion of Live and Local here on FM 90.9. I'm Kevin Kelly. Music, excuse me, music by Robert Schumann, the Scherzo movement from his quartet for piano, violin, viola, and cello, with Emmanuel Ax, Isaac Stern, Jamie Laredo, and Yo-Yo Ma here on Live and Local on FM 90.9. Support for our broadcast today comes in part from World Harvest International and Gourmet Foods on the corner of 6th and University in Champaign, providing Champaign-Urbana with an international selection of chocolates, cheeses, olives, balsamic vinegar, jam, spices, barbecue sauces, and more. World Harvest invites you to join them in supporting public radio. as a portion of a piece by David Veo called Moon and Sun, performed by the Orchid Ensemble with the Illinois Wesleyan University Collegiate Choir, directed by J. Scott Ferguson. And it is David Veo who wrote the music for an original opera called Fertile Ground, commissioned by Prairie Fire Theater, performed cooperatively with Illinois Wesleyan University, directed by Bob Mangiolardi, and with Story by Nancy Brokaw. Its premiere was Sunday night, and it continues with performances Tuesday at 7:30, Thursday at 7:30, and Friday night as well, 7:30 at Presser Hall on the Illinois Wesleyan campus in Bloomington. And just earlier today, I spoke with both David Veo and Nancy Brokaw about this new work. On the phone with me now here on Live and Local are Professor David Veo in the Composition Department at the Illinois Wesleyan University in Bloomington, and also Nancy Steele Brokaw, who is the author of the text for, and David Veo is the author of the music of, a new opera called Fertile Ground, which had its premiere Sunday night at Illinois Wesleyan. It's a joint project between Illinois Wesleyan School of Music and Prairie Fire Theater. The director is Bob Mangiolardi, and thank you both for joining me.
You're quite welcome.
Glad to be here.
So where did the idea for this come from, or what was the genesis of the opera? Oh, I should say, it's called Fertile Ground. I don't think I've mentioned that, have I?
Well, I think the genesis of the idea came from the vision statement of Prairie Fire Theater. They're, I think, 10 or 11 years old, and something they always wanted to do was commission an original work. And it was Bob Mangiolardi's idea for a long time to pair David and me and see what we could come up with. And it, you know, it took several years to put all the pieces together financially and time-wise for everyone, but I would say that's where it began.
Does that sound right in your memory, David?
Yeah, also Bob and I have been colleagues for quite a while, and he's actually sung a number of my songs, so we had a nice musical working relationship too, and liked each other as people quite a bit too, so that I think helped sort of prime things, you know, for making this feel like a comfortable and worthwhile project.
Right, and Bob and I've also, yeah, I should have said, worked together on many, many shows that I've written in town and he starred in, so
And Bob is director. Bob is director of opera also at Illinois Wesleyan, which I also didn't mention. Nancy, your current work right now is mostly what?
Oh, well, I guess you could call me a writer because I work in several different fields. I've been a journalist for many years. I contribute to the Pantograph and the Illinois Wesleyan Magazine. I also have a children's book in print called Leaving Emma. And then I'm the resident playwright for a Bloomington Normal group called Holiday Spectacular. And we mount two big shows a year. And I also was commissioned to co-write Lincoln's in Town, which was a show for the bicentennial of Lincoln's birthday in Bloomington last year.
And David, what has generally been the focus of your composition, if you can even make any sort of generalization?
Well, it kind of goes all over the place depending on the particular project I'm working on. But in recent years, I've spent a lot of time working closely with performers, and by a series of coincidences and just meeting someone through someone else, it's turned out in recent years that I've had the opportunity to write a number of pieces that include traditional Chinese instruments, so that's been kind of an interesting focus of mine. I'm working on one of those right now. Another interesting twist to what I've been doing lately is I'm doing a collaboration with a photographer who lives in Bloomington named Ken Cashian, and Ken is the photographer for the Illinois Farm Bureau, and for quite some time he's had an ongoing independent project taking photographs of the Mackinac River, which is the biggest river in this area, both along the river itself and in small towns along it. He's taken some really lovely photos, and a few years ago he approached a number of area poets to write poetry based on his images, and then he got the idea that maybe it would be interesting to involve a composer or two on the project. So recently I wrote a composition based on a number of his nature photographs, and we hope to put that up in the next year or so, where it will be a live performance of the music along with projected images of Ken's photos.
So how distant is that project from this one, Fertile Ground, which focuses on central Illinois and farming in particular?
It's certainly related, and interestingly, Nancy has played a role in that project as well, because she's helped kind of organize all the themes that are in Ken's work and so forth. And Nancy, please feel free to expand on that a bit too. The biggest difference is that the project I just mentioned to you, the music and photography project, I mostly was drawn to Ken's nature images, whereas in Fertile Ground, it's more about the people who live around here. Although I wouldn't say it's not about the land and nature at all. That certainly is a sort of character in the background throughout the show.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Nancy, why don't you tell us just a little bit about the story?
Okay. It's the story of a central Illinois farm family and the surrounding community. This particular family has lived on the family farm for over 100 years. Ben and Esther Morrow are the older farmers. They have two children who are also characters in the show. They're facing in this show problems on a lot of different fronts. First of all, just the general sort of job problems that come with farming, the weather, the grain markets, the crop yields, that sort of thing. And then Ben's been having health troubles, and so they're debating whether or not to sell the family farm. And then their daughter, Liddy, has come home after a mysterious absence, and a lot of the show is why was she gone and why is she back, and then they have a son who's kind of at least begins as a sort of obnoxious developer from Chicago who's really trying to get the farm sold, and he has a comic gum snapping smart aleck wife. And so they have all that to contend with. And at the same time, the local life goes on at the Busy Bee Cafe, where the farmers gather in the morning, and David wrote a brilliant song for them to sing. It's funny and warm and feels like a coffee shop. And then in the afternoon, the women gather there, and they sing a equally delightful song about sometimes you have to take a sip of coffee, eat a piece of pie, laugh and talk and try to carry on. So we have the Morrow family and their problems, and also the local life at the cafe. I think it represents rural central Illinois in a lot of ways.
It doesn't sound to me like it has the stereotypical love, intrigue, and murder that operas usually have.
We forgot to murder someone.
That's true, we did. But we didn't forget the love intrigue, because no. there's a farmer who's down the road from Ben and Esther named Gene, who was Liddy's longtime beau. And when she disappeared, he felt, of course, quite dumped. Now that Liddy's returned, they're kind of tentatively approaching each other. And a lot of the tension in the show is, are they going to get back together or not? Kind of hand in hand with what the heck happened to Liddy.
Yeah, and I would say, too, that, that is a love story. And then it's also a love story between Ben and Esther. And I don't think you see middle-aged or late middle-aged love portrayed a lot on the stage, but we do, and it's really touching. They they have a song they sing about a box of their life, and they love each other very much, and they're worried about the future. And I think we show that in a way that's refreshing.
So it sounds like the dramatic tension is relatively quiet compared to the usual turmoil of opera, at least that we think of with opera.
Yeah, it's not blood and thunder.
And Nancy, you said you've been involved in some other Prairie Fire productions, right?
Yeah, I have worked on, you know, some of their musical reviews, giving some narrative structure to how that's done.
So Prairie Fire usually does musicals, I think, right?
They do a lot of operetta, Gilbert and Sullivan. Yeah, oftentimes. Well, Bob would need to speak to that.
Yeah.
But,
so how, from what you know from your experience, how much of a departure is this for the company to be involved in that? And also, I guess this is probably tied in with it, how much is it Prairie Fire community performers and how much Illinois Wesleyan student performers?
Well, the production is exclusively being done with IWU student performers. It just turned out for a variety of practical reasons that this was the best way to get the show premiered. However, Prairie Fire is providing quite a bit of support, all the way from commissioning to the piece to providing help with things like props, design, and things like that.
And Nancy, from your experience, the departure from
this is something new, and Sunday, when we premiered the show, Bob came out and talked to the audience, as he typically does for Prairie Fire Theater shows, and he said, you know, this is something new, and you get to be a part of it. You're the first people in the world who've heard this performed, and just kind of welcomed them to the experience of new art as opposed to, you know, Pirates of Penzance, which we all love, but most of that crowd knows pretty well.
So what was the response?
Well, I think it went really well. David, you can speak to that, too.
Yeah, it certainly seemed positive to me, too. The applause certainly seemed warm.
Yeah, and they actually, there was an opportunity for audience to fill out comment cards, and we were actually reading some of those at midnight last night, and they were overwhelmingly positive. So,
well, that's nice to hear.
Yeah.
Musically speaking, David,
yeah,
we don't have any samples. This show hasn't been recorded, at least so far. And in fact, if it is, maybe let me know and we can come back at some point.
Sure.
And
we'll do.
And let our listening audience hear some of it. But how would you describe the style you used? Again, I'm sort of thinking of the tradition of musical theater, relative to that or relative to other sorts of operatic composers,
sure,
let's say.
Well, we're calling the show an opera partly because it's being presented by IW Opera Theater, and so it's consistent with that. And also, I think just for convenience, because we could equally well be calling this a musical, and that would be equally accurate and equally inaccurate. It's somewhere in the cracks between the two. What makes it more like a musical is that, first of all, it's not all sung. There are pretty long stretches of dialogue, wonderful dialogue of Nancy's. And one of the things Bob mentioned when he spoke before the premiere was that this is a relatively rare thing for the opera students to get to do, is act for long stretches without singing, so it was a nice way to stretch them. Also, a number of the songs are in a style that sounds more pop-oriented, perhaps, than classical, and so that would tend to tip it a little more toward the musical. On the other hand, there are other songs and some of the instrumental passages that sound more out of the operatic world, and some of the numbers feel that way in terms of the way they're orchestrated, the type of melody you might hear. So it seems to be, we've been talking about how it's really kind of a hybrid and how that's sort of a nice appropriate thing since it's about farm country and so forth. So they talk about the phenomenon I know of hybrid vigor that hybrids often are. especially healthy and durable. And so we'd like to hope that maybe that's characteristic of our show, too.
Aaron Copland wrote an opera called The Tender Land.
Yes.
Which seems to have somewhat of a similar background to mm-hmm. it. Did you have that in mind at all when you wrote this?
I did. In the back of my mind, it certainly occurred to me that, hey, here's a precedent for what we're doing here. And I do think that there's a quality of sort of serene tenderness in some of the music that I think, among other influences, probably arose partly out of my having heard The Tender Land.
But compared to some of the music that I've heard on your website,
mm-hmm.
Seems safe to say that listeners who might hear the idea, oh, it's a new opera, I'm going to hear avant-garde sorts of non-tuneful sort of writing, that's not very likely.
I don't think so. I don't think so. And also, when music is at the service of drama, often things that might not feel so acceptable to someone in a context outside of drama, if it was just played by instruments, let's say, sometimes feels more acceptable because it's supporting something that's going on dramatically.
David Veo, composer of the new opera Fertile Ground, which is having its premiere this week in Bloomington. Here's just a little sample of another work of his, just to give you some idea of what his music sounds like. This is from Quiet Poem, which in turn comes from Sandpails. It's actually performed by Professor Robert Mangiolardi, who is the baritone here and also the director of opera theater at Illinois Wesleyan and of this production with the Chamber Ensemble of Illinois Wesleyan students and faculty. Just a bit of Quiet Poem. And how have the students taken to this? So they have been enjoying the opportunity of premiering something? Have they been mystified at all? They, you know, since it's not their bread and butter, Puccini and Mozart and so on.
Yeah, a little of both. One thing that Susan Klotzbach, the brilliant music director of the show, talked with the voice students about was that she said this music has a pretty big learning curve, that it takes a while to learn the notes and figure the rhythms out, but that once you get that figured out, it all kind of snaps into place. I've actually had a number of people over the years say that about different pieces of mine, and it makes a lot of sense to me because when I'm composing, I often go through the reverse process. I begin with either singing or playing something on the piano or something like that. I begin by making music, and then when I get an idea I like, I have to figure out how to write it down. Fairly often when I write it down, I find that, oh my gosh, now that I've figured out all these rhythms and gotten all the notes, it sort of looks more complicated than I wish it was. So I hope that people will be able to reverse that process and start with the thing that looks a little more complicated based on trying to get the thing down accurately. But once they've figured it out, they'll get it. Ah, that there'll be this moment of, oh, well, now I hear how this goes. I understand this. So that seems to be what they've gone through.
And I imagine that the rhythm of speech has a lot to do with how you've set.
It does. That's a very good point. Yeah, yeah. And I've mentioned that to them. American English, in particular, is a very unpredictable language rhythmically. I remember a number of years ago, I listened to a snippet of somebody talking, and I recorded it, and I tried to write it down accurately in musical rhythmic notation, and I couldn't believe how complicated it got. That taught me something.
Well, it certainly sounds like a great opportunity for the students and for Prairie Fire Theater and for the audience who are familiar both with the Illinois Wesleyan Opera productions and with Prairie Fire productions to experience this new event. It's called Fertile Ground, an original opera, stories by Nancy Brokaw and music by David Veo. And it opened on Sunday at Illinois Wesleyan at Presser Hall in Westbrook Auditorium. And the remaining performances are tonight and Thursday at 8 o'clock and then Friday at 7:30. If you'd like more information, you can visit the Prairie Fire Theater website, which is prairiefiretheater.org. You can certainly also go to the Illinois Wesleyan University website.
And I would extend a special invitation to folks living in small rural communities and perhaps who work on farms to come to the show, because we'd love to know if it rings true.
Yeah, it's not often that farmers have operas written about their lives.
Right, and like I said last night when we went through the comment cards, there were two people who said they grew up on farms and that this really captured what it felt like to them to live in that life. I can't remember their words exactly, but there's no comment that would have made me happier than that. So,
It sounds like a great compliment. Well, thank you both for joining us on Live and Local.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you very much.
David Veo and Nancy Brokaw, authors of Fertile Ground, an original opera, having its premiere performances in Bloomington this week. And this is Live and Local. I'm Kevin Kelly. You're listening to WYLL FM and HD Urbana, operating translators W293 AF Danville and W266 AF Urbana, the listener-supported broadcasting service of the College of Media at Illinois.